This is Jean Marie Laskus with the podcast Cement City. So there's this election coming up, a big one, and one guy's been indicted. People are talking voter fraud. Democracy itself is on the line. Sound familiar? Well, this isn't that election. This one is in Denora, Pennsylvania, a dying town in the middle of nowhere, where I bought a house and stayed for 3 years. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions, available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
The Rich Scioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHT.
Why? Sorry, I had my mic muted for a second there as I'm yelling about Zelensky and Putin. Zelensky and Shapiro. But welcome back to the show. It's our fourth and final hour on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD, 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Scioli. By the way, I got a couple new audio clips for you, including Nancy Pelosi, the vampiric one, snapping at Jake Tapper when Jake Tapper read some criticisms of Kamala Harris by President Trump. And Jamie Dimon, CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase, talking about immigration. I'm going to get to that as well. And in New Jersey, there's a bill that would punish doctors for so-called misinformation. California did this. And remember what his royal rugness, King Philip the Unaccountable, said. He wants to make New Jersey the California of the East Coast. Well, that's exactly what he's trying to do. That's exactly what he's trying to do. Trump had a big rally in Georgia today. Played you some audio earlier. He's touting his plan to ease the burden on U.S. businesses, talking about a 15% corporate tax rate if you build in America, if you build in the United States of America. And that's good. And he also went after Kamala Harris big time, but he wants to lower the corporate tax rate from 21% to 15% for companies that manufacture in America. And I think that's a great idea. It's a really, really important thing. In fact, let me go. I'll come back to the Zelensky thing. But let me just play this quick clip from Trump. He said this: under his plan, American workers will be no longer worried about losing their jobs to foreign nations. I like this clip a lot. This is a good cut. This is a good line from Trump today. Cut two.
And under my plan, American workers will no longer be worried about losing your jobs to foreign nations. Instead, foreign nations will be worried about losing their jobs to America. Going to bring them back. And it won't even be difficult. Your only worry will be deciding which job to take. There will be plenty of them. That will be your biggest problem. Darling, which company should I go with? We're going to bring them back, and we're going to bring them back at levels not to be believed, but you'll believe it in about 2 years from now. Wow, that happened fast. You're going to have so many companies wanting to come in because this is where the money is. It won't be if we keep running it like we have for the last 4 years. But this is what they want. This is what they want.
Now, meanwhile, in Pennsylvania, the president of Ukraine, Zelensky, is hanging out with Josh Shapiro. So Governor Josh Shapiro tweets out yesterday, Lori and I are proud to welcome President Zelensky to Pennsylvania today. Pennsylvanians stand with the people of Ukraine and their fight for freedom. Do we? Is that we stand? Is that a thing? Now, that's the governor's decided that policy. So now governors dictate foreign policy for the people of their state. That's a new one for me. I didn't realize that. I didn't realize governors did that. That's funny. I had no idea. Call me ill-informed. I didn't realize that that was the job of a governor to determine how his state feels about an international conflict. Zelensky was driven around in Secret Service vehicles at a time when the agency has been conspicuously short on manpower for providing security for former President Donald Trump in the face of two assassination attempts. Who's paying for Zelensky's air transit to Pennsylvania and his Secret Service car? National Review asks. Great question. Zelensky does not need to travel securely, and there's a legitimate reason for the Ukrainian president to be in the United States, where he is speaking before the UN General Assembly. I'm sorry, he does need to travel securely. As is true of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, he's also acting well within his rights and his nation's interest by using his appearances here to make his case to the American people and their leaders for aid to his nation. It's his job to care about his country, not about ours. And given the nature of politics in a democracy, Zelensky's mission here will inevitably involve him to a certain degree in our own politics, because American politicians will compete to position themselves as his friends or as his antagonists. But his trip to Scranton is another matter. Casey and Cartwright, both Democrats, are active candidates for federal office. Pennsylvania is the most crucial swing state in the presidential election. Shapiro is a Democrat who spoke at the party's national convention and was also picked to be the VP. The symbolism of Scranton being Joe Biden's birthplace is not lost on anybody. Zelensky didn't really help matters by giving an interview to Joshua Yaffa of the New Yorker just before departing for his trip, in which he took pot shots at J.D. Vance. This is the exchange. Apart from Trump's own reluctance to talk about Ukrainian victory, he has chosen J.D. Vance as his vice presidential candidate. Response from Zelensky, he is too radical. Reporter says Vance has come out with a more precise plan to, and then Zelensky jumps in and says, to give up our territories. The reporter then says, your words, not mine, but yes, that's the gist of it, to which Zelensky says, his message seems to be that Ukraine must make a sacrifice. This brings us back to the question of the cost and who shoulders it. The idea that the world should end this war at Ukraine's expense is unacceptable, but I do not consider this concept of his a plan in any formal sense. That would be an awful idea. If a person were actually going to carry it out to make Ukraine shoulder the cost of stopping the war by giving up its territories, but there's certainly no way this could ever happen. So then the reporter asked, well, then what does this mean for Ukraine that people with such ideas and slogans are rising to power? You see the hidden subtext here? For us, these are dangerous signals coming as they do from a potential vice president. Vance and others who share his views should clearly understand that the moment they start trading on our territory is the moment they start pawning America's interests elsewhere. Whichever president or vice president raises this prospect that ending the war hinges on cementing the status quo, with Ukraine simply giving up its land, should be held responsible for potentially starting a global war, because such a person would be implying that this kind of behavior is acceptable. I don't take Vance's words seriously. Now, Biden's going to meet with Zelensky at the White House tonight or tomorrow at some point. Zelensky has said he intends to meet with Trump on his American trip, and to his credit, he has also tried to triangulate in the New Yorker interview, observing of Vance's comments. I should say that it hasn't been like this with Trump. He and I talked on the phone, and his message was as positive as it could be from my point of view. I understand. I will lend support and so on. But he said, I think Ukraine has demonstrated the wisdom of not becoming captured by American domestic politics. We have always tried to avoid influencing the choices of the American people. That would be simply wrong. Now, if the Biden-Harris administration and or the government of Pennsylvania is using taxpayer money to ferry Zelensky to Scranton, that's a problem. Recall precisely what it was that got Trump impeached in 2019. Quote, this is what they said. Any benefit that the president obtains with the leverage of U.S. military aid to a foreign country should involve a public benefit to the American taxpayers who paid for that aid, not solely a personal or political benefit to the president personally. Using public resources for your own sole benefit is a textbook case of misappropriation of public funds. This is not a question of subjective motive. Politicians often have impure motives, and many fine things have been done for the public interest by politicians who are just looking out for their own political interests. The right questions to ask is whether taxpayer funds were used as leverage for something the public had no legitimate interest in. That further along the scale we find ourselves, the more this looks like a genuine abuse of official power. That's what they said. Okay? So now the question is this. You fly Zelensky out to a swing state 6 weeks before Election Day. You got Bob Casey, who's on the ballot. Josh Shapiro, who's out there as a spokesperson for Kamala Harris. And you got Josh Shapiro signing munitions. And everybody knows that Donald Trump wants to see this war come to an end. And everybody knows that Kamala Harris is going to keep this war going and going and give Ukraine everything that it possibly needs. So the fact that they're doing this, that's the question. How is this OK? How is this not impeachable? How is this not some sort of election interference? And for Josh Shapiro to tell the people of Pennsylvania that they stand with Ukraine, he has no right to do that. Governors don't get to make foreign policy statements. He's signing his name on munitions that are going to be used against Russians. Russian soldiers who have no choice but to fight in this battle. They don't have a say. They have to go fight. So they can look at Josh Shapiro's name, I guess, as the missile comes down on top of them. I mean, But the governor of Pennsylvania now dictates foreign policy for the people of the Commonwealth? Are you okay with that as a Pennsylvania resident? Are you okay with him making that stand, that bold stand, that we stand with Ukraine? Because I don't know. I mean, I live in Jersey, but I guess my idiot governor probably says the same crap. I want to know, okay, what does that mean, standing with them? Does that mean that I have to pay for this war forever? Is there a plan? Is there an exit plan? Is there a strategy? Is there going to be some sort of a peace summit at some point? Is there a way we can end this thing? Or is this just all in, as much as it costs, whatever it takes, forever and ever? If it takes 10 years, it takes 10 years. If it takes $1 trillion, it takes $1 trillion. I'd like to know those things, Governor, before you go out there and make a statement. And who the hell asked you to do that statement? Governors are not supposed to engage in foreign affairs. Literally, that's a thing in the United States of America. Governors are not supposed to engage in foreign politics. That's been a longstanding principle. Did they not go after members of the Trump administration for having conversations with diplomats before they were in office? That's what they literally went after Michael Flynn for. He had conversations with them before he was officially the national security advisor, and they went after the guy and investigated the guy. But Josh Shapiro can buddy around with Zelensky and hang out with him, and he can make declarations that the Commonwealth stands with Ukraine. Forever and ever? At what price? What cost? When did we decide governors are now able to dictate foreign policy? It's infuriating to me. It's really infuriating to me. Okay. 855-839-1210 on Twitter at Rich Zeoli. What's the problem on Twitter right now? Some people are complaining about, what did I say? What I'm looking at the Zeoli Army's tweet. Zeoli said, my app is screwed up. Zeoli said he was going to get into something in the 4 o'clock hour and it's 5:55. Oh, yeah, I do that sometimes. I say the 4 o'clock hour. I meant the fourth and final hour. What?
Justin and I were talking about that actually off.
Did I say that? So I did say that.
Yeah. Yeah, you did.
Well, what can I tell you? Men's brains shrink at 8 p.m. In my case, it's 6 p.m. I don't know what to tell you. All I know is that whatever Bridget's cooking up there smells delicious. Oh, no, it's what I made. I made Parmesan crusted chicken, and I froze some the other night, and she's heating it up.
Way to toot your own horn there.
Delicious. Yeah, that's, men are the better chefs than women. I'm just sorry. It's true, you know. Also, women shouldn't have the right to vote. I'm kidding. Stop it. The right to drive is the one that they shouldn't have. What's the clip that's also a joke? Just kidding. I love when my wife drives me around. I was just going to say that Cardinal Dolan's reaction to Kamala Harris not attending the Al Smith dinner, and how Chuck Schumer is claiming it wasn't even Kamala's decision, it was her staff's. So this has not happened in 40 years. She's bailing on this. Walter Mondale turned down the invitation back in 84, and he got trounced by Reagan, obviously, in the biggest landslide in American political history. Kamala Harris will not go to the Al Smith dinner. It's a charitable night. She probably doesn't want to be around Catholics and priests and a cardinal because she's so pro-abortion, and she probably doesn't want to have any blowback, but also she can't think on her feet and she can't deliver jokes and she'd probably cackle and it would be a disaster for her. But here's what Cardinal Dolan said in reaction to Kamala Harris bailing on that dinner, cut number 12.
We're disappointed. We were looking forward to giving the vice president an enthusiastic welcome. And we were confident that she would find this. You know, she speaks very much about the high ideals and how it's good to get away from division and come together in unity and all. Well, that's what the Al Smith dinner is all about. We haven't given up yet. We're not used to this. We don't know how to handle it. This hasn't happened in 40 years since Walter Mondale turned down the invitation. And remember, he lost 49 out of 50 states. I don't want to say there's a direct connection there. But so we're not used to this, and we're not giving up. You know who's been a help to us, Lauren, is Senator Schumer and Governor Hochul. They both are working hard to see that they convince her to come.
So there's still a chance.
Yeah, and Senator Schumer said to me, he said, I don't think she made the decision. I think her schedulers and ours are saying she can't make it. So we're not giving up. We hope she's here.
Well, she's not going to make it, Cardinal. Sorry to disappoint you, but she's not going to make it. No way. It's not going to happen. So good. Trump will have the night to himself. He'll make jokes. It'll be a lot of fun. It'll be great. He'll have a blast. He'll have a lot of fun. And good for him for doing so. You know what I mean? Now, we've discussed this question of whether or not Trump should do another debate. And Mark Penn, who's a pollster, has explained why Trump not wanting to do another debate makes sense. I've told you my position on this. I'm fine if he does. I'm fine if he doesn't. He doesn't need to. But I'm going to take a quick break. And when I get back, I'm going to explain to you exactly why Trump does not need to do another debate. And Mark Penn's point about this is correct. Trump does not need to, and I'll tell you why. Plus, Jamie Dimon speaking the truth on the border just moments ago. I'm going to share that with you as well. Trump crushing it today in Georgia with a really, really big rally after his really, really big, huge rally in Pennsylvania yesterday. You can tell this man's having fun. He's enjoying himself. He's feeling the momentum, and he's feeling like a winner. We'll be right back.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
There's a bill in Jersey. I'm going to get my friend Assemblywoman Vicki Flynn on the show tomorrow. There's a this Herb Conway, who's a South Jersey legislator, who's running for, I guess, state Senate now. Congress, I don't know what the hell he's running for. It doesn't matter. But anyway, he's got this bill. He's a doctor. He's a physician. And it would allow state licensing boards to issue penalties to healthcare professionals, doctors, nurses, etc., who disseminate what he calls misinformation. A healthcare professional who engages in the dissemination of misinformation or disinformation shall be deemed to have engaged in professional misconduct. Disinformation means misinformation that is deliberately disseminated with malicious intent or an intent to mislead. Misinformation means any health-related claim of fact that is false and contradicted by contemporary scientific consensus, contrary to the standard of care. Now, Jerry Scharfenberger, who's a good man, he's a legislator in Monmouth County, fighting the bill. And Vicki Flynn, my buddy, she's a Republican, too. She's doing really, really well. She's fighting this, too. He said this is Cold War era Soviet stuff. This not only restricts the First Amendment rights of doctors, but also the freedom of people to pursue the medical treatments they and their doctors think is best. 100%. And you know, when they did this out in California, they got actually sued by the American Civil Liberties Union. They sued the state of California and Governor Gavin the Hare Newsom. A federal judge ruled the law was too vague and blocked it from being implemented. But you know what this is about, right? This is about if you go to the doctor and the doctor says, oh, try hydroxychloroquine, or I don't know about the COVID vaccine. I don't know if you should get it, or, you know, doctors suggest maybe not giving a certain vaccine or whatever it is. They want to be able to punish those doctors. Or if a doctor comes out and says, no, your 12-year-old daughter is really a boy and you have to go forward and chop her, give her hormone blockers. Because that's, you know, you can't have a doctor go, listen, she'll grow out of this. This could be something else here. Maybe this is attention. Maybe we should get her to a psychologist or something like that. A doctor would be fine. It's a way to control doctors and nurses and to have whatever the intelligentsia decides would then be dictated for all of us, for everybody. And look, they did it in California. Now they're trying it in Jersey. It'll come to Pennsylvania soon. It'll come to every blue state soon because they want to control. They're control freaks. They're all control freaks. And they want to control every aspect of our lives. And God forbid a doctor might say, you know, try this medicine that I've heard some good things about it. Or maybe what you should do is get more vitamin D. Or maybe, you know, we've had some luck with this. Or no, he'd be too afraid to do that. And too afraid to tell a parent that their child may not actually really be in a different body, that maybe they'll grow out of this. A doctor would know he could lose his medical license and then have to go along with the propaganda, whatever the state tells them. It's a scary, scary proposition, but it's what they do. It's what the Democrats do. They control everything. And I've told you before, you know, the battle right now that we are in is a battle for information. It is a battle for information. And this is why when
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town. A dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Whenever I hear talk about misinformation boards or disinformation boards or laws against disinformation or misinformation or anything else, I say, hell no, absolutely not. Because whoever's in power, they decide what's information and what's disinformation. They get to make that choice. You realize that, right? It's the same thing with hate speech. Whoever's in charge decides what's hate speech. One man's hate speech is another person criticizing the intelligentsia's consensus on transgender children. I'll give you an example. This is, you know, let me play this clip for you. This is Robert Kennedy Jr. Bobby Kennedy comes out and says a lot of things. He wants to make America healthy again. That's been a big thing. He's talked a lot about the poisons in our food supply. We had Marty McCary on the other day talking about the FDA and the collusion, the CDC and all these government agencies and how conflicted they all are. You know what I mean? And here's Robert F. Kennedy Jr. talking about Ozempic, for example, and obesity in America. Cut 24.
As everyone knows, once a drug is approved for Medicare, it goes to Medicaid. And there is a push to recommend Ozempic for Americans as young as six over a condition, obesity, that is completely preventable and barely even existed 100 years ago. Since 74% of Americans are obese, the cost of all of them, if they take their Ozempic prescriptions, will be $3 trillion a year. This is a drug that has made Novo Nordisk the biggest company in Europe. It's a Danish company, but the Danish government does not recommend it. It recommends a change in diet to treat obesity and exercise. Virtually Novo Nordisk's entire value is based upon its projections of what Ozempic is going to sell to Americans. For half the price of Ozempic, we could purchase regeneratively raised organic agriculture or organic food for every American, three meals a day, and gym membership for every obese American. Why are members of Congress doing the bidding of this Danish company instead of standing up for American farmers and children?
Let me also make this point, too, very clear, which is that you go to a doctor and the doctor says to you, you know, you should really just try diet and exercise. Is that misinformation if he doesn't put you on a weight loss drug or a kid? I don't know. It's scary stuff. It's scary stuff. But you know what else is scary, too? Ending the filibuster. And I mentioned this earlier in the show, but Kamala Harris has said she wants to end the filibuster for Roe v. Wade. Oh, by the way, some other breaking news. Judge Eileen Cannon, the judge in the classified documents case in Florida, is going to preside over the trial of Ryan Routh in the attempted assassination of Donald Trump. Wow. That just broke. How about that? That's pretty amazing. Here's what Kamala Harris said about ending the filibuster. Take a listen.
Now to abortion, you've said you want to work with Congress to pass a federal bill to codify abortion rights. How do you plan to get enough support in Congress to restore abortion rights when you'd likely need to pass a Senate filibuster? You'd have potential legal hurdles.
Because we need the votes in Congress to do exactly what you are saying, and that's true. And it is well within our reach. That being said, I've been very clear. I think we should eliminate the filibuster for Roe.
Now, Joe Manchin has come out and said this is ridiculous. Joe Manchin's angry at her for saying this, but I've told you before, Democrats' ultimate plan is to get two more seats in the U.S. Senate by making D.C. a state, get two more seats in the U.S. Senate by making Puerto Rico a state, so they get four more, control the Senate, kill the filibuster, and run everything. And that's their ultimate power play. Ultimate power play. That's what they want to do. But this is insane. And she does. This is not a gaffe. This is what they mean. They want to destroy the filibuster. So there'd be no more Mr. Smith goes to Washington moments where some brave senator stands up and fights against something or fights for what he believes or she believes. That's gone. That'll go away. By the way, during the debate, she was not fact-checked on this, but Kamala Harris, during the debate, said that both Goldman Sachs and the Wharton School of Business said her economic plan is better than Trump's. Both Goldman Sachs and Wharton have now come out and said she was lying. Wharton Business School shoots down Harris's claim she'll strengthen the economy. Goldman Sachs CEO says the report that Harris is better for the economy was blown out of proportion. But they didn't fact-check her on that in the debate. And that's why Mark Penn said that he doesn't need, Trump doesn't need another debate. And I agree with that point. He doesn't need another debate because Kamala Harris lost. And whether or not Trump won, he lost. And that's the bottom line. That's the bottom line. Now, let me share this clip of Jamie Dimon. Well, actually, you know what? I have a guest coming up, so I don't have time to do it. But just know this. Jamie Dimon came out today and he said, essentially now, he basically said that if you do not control the borders, you are going to destroy your country, our country. Now that they are sending migrants into New York, all my super liberal friends realize what a problem it is. So you see, those of you that think that immigration is not a big issue, Jamie Dimon saying that if you do not control the borders, you are going to destroy our country. Now that they are sending migrants into New York, all my super liberal friends realize what a problem it is. You know what else is a problem? Censorship is a huge problem. Like what they're doing at American universities, like they're doing right here in Philadelphia at the University of Penn, going after a professor. I'm going to tell you about that straight ahead. Don't go away.
The Rich Cioli Show on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD.
A local issue that has major national implications for freedom of speech, the First Amendment, and the chaos on college campuses where they really decide what's free speech and what isn't. Matt Lamb, associate editor of one of my favorite sites out there, The College Fix, thecollegefix.com. And he joins me right now. Matt, thanks for making time for me in Philadelphia. I appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on to talk about this important issue.
Yeah, so it's about Penn, and Penn's been in the news for a lot of different things over the last year or so, including all of the anti-Semitic protests at the school. I was actually at an event recently. It was the Greater Zionists of America organization, and they had a young man speak who was a Penn student who was just recounting all of the harassment that he received as a Jewish kid. Really horrible, horrible stuff that the campus tolerated there at Penn. And then there's another issue involving a professor named Amy Wax, who's a professor at the law school at Penn. And there's an update on that story. So take us back to what happened with Professor Wax, if you could.
So for the past several years, really going back to at least 2018, the university and various leaders and student activists have been trying to get Amy Wax fired or punished. She is a law professor who is conservative and has typical conservative views about crime and immigration. And as of the university confirmed this morning that she will be suspended without pay. I'm sorry, she'll be suspended for the next school year and only receive half of her salary. She'll be stripped of her named chair, lose her summer pay, and she was publicly reprimanded today in the Penn Almanac, which is like their official publication of statements.
And why is the question that I have. Why did this happen to her?
Absolutely. So she has made a number of statements that's drawn the ire of leftists on campus. So she has said that family breakdown, high crime rates, and educational underachievement in black communities, that's what causes more problems than racism or discrimination. She has been critical of immigration of Asians, and she's invited Jared Taylor, who some people, you know, he's a white nationalist, has some sort of bizarre views to her class. And I should know that she's a law scholar, and part of her job is to explore legal issues and to promote debate. So even if you disagree with some of her views, it seems pretty obvious this falls under her role as a professor to encourage debate on important legal and political topics.
Yeah, especially if you want to become a lawyer, right? I mean, if you go to law school, the idea is you're going to be a lawyer, so you have to be able to think about both sides and challenge both sides if you want to be successful, particularly if you want to be a trial lawyer. And you have to be able to think in terms of both the offense and the defense, or the prosecution and the defense, or defending your client who might be a reprehensible human being, or defending or trying to overturn a case that you find to be reprehensible. So, I mean, it seems to me that limiting speech in law school, and I'm against limiting speech anywhere, but particularly in law school, seems to be a really, really bad idea for future lawyers.
Right. And we've seen, the past several years at Yale and other law schools, guest speakers get shouted down. And I think this sort of action only encourages more of that, because if the university punishes her, why wouldn't you shout down other people that might come in and hold similar views? And I should note, just a few weeks ago, Penn announced this new policy of institutional neutrality, that they wouldn't get involved in political issues. But that announcement is practically meaningless if their own professors are not allowed to share their own views. And usually institutional neutrality protects professors and departments in making political statements. And Penn has investigated other professors before for even just encouraging debate on issues like transgender people serve in the military? Should taxpayers fund their surgeries? So Penn is not a welcome place for free speech at all.
I noticed that one of my favorite organizations, in addition to the College Fix, is FIRE, the Foundation for Individual Rights and Expression. They also condemned this today. They said, after years of promising it would find a way to punish Professor Amy Wax for her controversial views on race and gender, Penn delivered today, despite zero evidence Wax ever discriminated against her students. So they see, that's a key point, right? I mean, she has not done anything to discriminate against her students. She hasn't given like white kids better grades over other. I mean, we've seen that with Harvard, where they discriminated against Asian students, but there's no evidence that Professor Wax did any of that.
Right. There's been none. She did make a comment several years ago where she said, quote, "I don't think I've ever seen a black student graduate in the top quarter of the law school class, and rarely in the top half." Now, that might sound like a shocking statement, but what's worth noting is Penn, to our knowledge, has never disproved her allegation. And that statement alone isn't necessarily discriminatory. She appears to be criticizing affirmative action, maybe she's concerned about black achievement in schools, but that alone, she never said, "I would never support a student," or "I purposely, grade black students poorly." She was making an observation about results in law school, which Penn could disprove if it had the data to do so.
Yeah, that's a good point, because if you want to really question affirmative action, for example, and you want to look at the results of that, because it's not fair to students to be put into a situation where they just can't succeed, because obviously success is important. If you go to law school, it depends upon your job and your career and everything else. It's relevant to have those conversations, I think. Joining me right now, this is a very, very important topic that we're all over right now here on Talk Radio 1210 WPHD. From one of my favorite sites, thecollegefix.com, Matt Lamb is the associate editor. Conservative Penn professor Amy Wax suspended with pay cut and public reprimand. This is really about embarrassing her and intimidating other professors, is it not? I mean, other professors, stay in your lane. Don't say things that woke doesn't like, because if you do, we're gonna publicly humiliate and shame you. So stay in your lane and just be good little indoctrinators to the students.
Yes. So law school dean Ted Ruger has essentially said that with these punishments, the university punishing her. And so while they can make, and FIRE made this point, essentially, while you can make a promise of academic freedom, if there's always in the back of people's mind, remember what happened to Amy Wax. Remember, she said something about crime in the black community. Remember, she was critical of immigration. Remember, she brought up IQ, which you're never allowed to do. You too could get punished. You could lose pay. You could have to say, which is part of punishment, at the beginning of every speech, that you don't speak for Penn Law School, which, of course, is crazy. Of course, if a professor goes and gives a speech at some private event, they're not really speaking as a professor. They're offering their own views, or those are not the views of the law school. So this is absolutely a great way for the university to limit free speech and open debate while on paper promising academic debate and open expression at Penn.
You know, it's funny, too, when the House of Representatives, that committee, Elise Stefanik in particular, reamed out the former president of Penn for allowing the vile hatred to be spewed all over college campuses, I didn't feel any sympathy for her, because these colleges have not been bastions of free speech. You know, if they had said, listen, we let all thoughts and views, we're a free market of ideas and expression, so we don't limit anything, as vile as it is, I would have said this was unfair. But they don't. They pick and choose, and that's the problem. And so if you play that game where you pick and choose which speech is tolerable and which speech is not, then you are subject then to be criticized for the speech that you allow. If you don't have a blanket policy of freedom of speech, if you pick and choose, then okay, you've chosen to allow these very vile statements to be made against Jewish students. Well, guess what? Now we're going to call you out for it, because you played that game of saying certain speech is acceptable and certain speech is not.
Right. And what's interesting is Amy Wax sort of defended President Liz McGill, because she did an interview a few months ago where she sort of warned conservatives to be careful about how much they go after what's seen as anti-Semitic comments versus free speech. You know, where is the line, which McGill was trying to say, but she made it very clumsily and didn't really read the room. And, you know, still Amy Wax got punished. And so absolutely there's different free speech standards at Penn, which means there's really no free speech standard, because there's no clear rule on what you're allowed to say and what you're not allowed to say.
And it's not just Penn, right? I mean, you guys at the College Fix, you look at this. I know that they do this at FIRE. They rank universities on freedom of speech. But this particularly seems to be a real problem within the Ivy League.
Well, even not just the Ivy League, though, I'll say, because at the University of Louisville, which you can read tomorrow at the College Fix, but this is our view out there, is the University of Louisville fired a psychiatrist for offering his medical opinion about surgeries and drugs for minors who are, you know, confused about their gender. And the University of Louisville said he was speaking as a professor at this Heritage Foundation event, so we're allowed to punish him. And the judge said, it doesn't matter. It's still protected speech if he's speaking as a professor or as a private citizen, because he's an academic. And if you want him to speak about medical issues and interventions, you have to give him that freedom. And so it certainly does happen. I mean, Harvard is definitely one of the worst universities, but it also happens in the South at the University of Louisville and really all over.
I saw on your site, you have a story about this professor who wrote a book called Progressive Myths. And obviously our friend, Dr. Wilfred Riley, wrote his book, Lies My Liberal Teacher Told Me. It's good to see academics pushing back on this. I know there was an op-ed in the New York Times about this the other day from a Princeton professor about, you know, how conservatives should deal with this on college campuses. I'm glad that there are professors out there who are willing to take the risk of pushing back on this nonsense. But boy, does it come with a risk. As obviously, as you can see, it definitely comes with a risk.
Oh, for sure. Over the summer, I went to a conference run by this woman, sort of a Montessori method, open debate with high schoolers and college students. And there was a philosophy professor there who said, you know, don't use my name because I'm just fearful of retribution. And this group was just, they were reading these essays from these obscure German philosophers. I mean, really nothing super controversial, but he was even worried about being associated with this sort of libertarian center right group. And so, you know, you can go to our cancel culture database, and we have over 1,000 entries about student speakers, guest speakers, professors, of people being targeted for cancellation. Amy, you know, to make a cliche, it's Amy Wax today, but it's definitely be someone else tomorrow who's being canceled.
No question about it. Well, keep up the good work. CollegeFix.com, CollegeFix.com. Matt Lamb, thank you. Matt, are you on Twitter? Can we follow you on X?
Yeah, if you want to follow me at MattLamb22, but I would definitely check out the College Fix, because we tweet a lot more, we X a lot more than I do on my own personal account.
You bet, buddy. We'll do that. We'll follow the College Fix for sure. Thanks for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Rich.
And we'll continue along here in our fourth and final hour. Just want to mention the big story of the day brought to you by our buddy Dr. Mike Vanaria, VanariaDental.com. Go see him today for your perfect smile. V-A-N-A-R-I-A, VanariaDental.com. Two locations to serve you in Cinnaminson and Woodbury. Dr. Mike Vanaria.
I'm Jean Marie Laskus. I'm a journalist. I spent my career helping Americans understand the lives of other Americans. Coal miners, gun shop clerks, staffers in the White House mailroom. In my new podcast, Cement City, I tell the story of an entire town, a dying town that you have absolutely no reason to care about. But trust me, you will. Listen to and follow Cement City, an Odyssey original podcast in partnership with Cement City Productions. Available now for free on the Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.